You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm your host, Joe Elia. We've come to New York City this time, at least electronically, to talk with Colleen Farrell. Dr. Farrell is a third-year resident in internal medicine at NYU in Bellevue Hospital. This July, she starts a pulmonary and critical care fellowship at New York Presbyterian Cornell. I became aware of Dr. Farrell when a classmate of hers sent along a posting she'd made on social media. It read, in part, quote, "I feel grateful that I am able to put my training to public service. I don't do well being cooped up at home. I became a doctor to do this work, but I would be lying if I said I wasn't scared. I am calm and committed, but also deeply, deeply terrified." Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Farrell.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Joe.
So, there you are in New York City. How are you and your colleagues doing? Are you getting enough time away from the clinic to get sleep and get food?
Yeah, so I would say that the experience varies widely from week to week. So in this situation right now, in the midst of the COVID pandemic, it seems like for everyone, you're either fully on or totally off at home. So you're catching me in one of those off periods. About 2 weeks ago, I started taking care of coronavirus patients at Bellevue. And when you're doing that work, the shifts are long and really tiring. And our whole residency schedule has been kind of recreated to meet the staffing needs of this crisis. But built into that is some time off. And so right now, I was still due for a two-week vacation towards the end of this year. And so right now, I'm getting 1 week of that. So I'm in this weird place of getting rest right now and knowing that I'm jumping back into it in just a few days.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned in that posting that I read, that I quoted from, you mentioned a patient. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how that patient fared. Do you know?
Last I checked, he was still in the ICU. He was intubated and requiring dialysis. Yeah, so this was actually the first coronavirus patient I met. And when I met him, I was really worried about him. He was still breathing on his own, but you know, requiring a lot of oxygen. And so that it was the middle of the night. I called one of our ICU doctors and he was moved to the ICU where he still is. And you know, we're seeing that with a lot of our patients that when they get to the ICU, it looks like it's a pretty long course for a lot of them. It's not, you know, needing to be intubated for a few days and quickly extubated. But it's a long course with a lot of uncertainty. So yeah. I keep kind of checking in, just hoping that he'll get better, but it's going to take time, I think, to see.
Yes. Well, let's hope that he does get better. How are you keeping up with policy? Have you joined any of the private chat groups like the one described by Dr. Julian Flores during his interview here?
Yes, there's right now we're dealing with just so much information. So I'm getting information from several places. First of all, I think especially in my role as a resident physician, decisions I make are about the patients I'm directly caring for or managing my own team. And so it's hyper local. So first I have to pay attention to the policies from my institution. We get multiple emails a day. And like a lot of residents, I'm not employed by just one. Well, I'm employed by an academic medical center, but I rotate at NYU Langone, Bellevue Hospital, and the VA. So those are three completely different hospital systems. There are three different hospitals for one, but they're also a private hospital, a public hospital, and a federal hospital. And so just to do your job, you have to keep track of those policies. And so we have a lot of internal communication with, you know, documents, and this is the latest of the PPE standard. This is how long you have to be out of work if you have symptoms. This is when a patient is allowed to move to this place or that place. So I had to, those are the policies I pay the closest attention to. But then I would say, you know, while I've been home this week on my, so, you know, quote unquote vacation, I've been tuning into New York Governor Cuomo's updates, because and those actually help me understand kind of even what I'm seeing sometimes at the hospital. He's been talking about, you know, we're going to transfer patients from some hospitals in New York City to others to even out the load. And that helps me understand when I'm at work, I might be getting transfers from other hospitals and understanding why that is. And then in terms of more like informal mechanisms, I'm pretty active on Twitter, and I get a lot of updates there from people on the front lines. And then I've also been reconnecting with colleagues from medical school that I haven't been in touch with for years. My Harvard Medical School class Facebook group, I don't think anyone touched it for 3 or 4 years, but all of a sudden people are connecting on there, talking about what's going on in their hospitals and just sending support to each other because, you know, we're all thinking of each other and kind of reading what's going on in different parts of the country.
Tell us a bit about your social media posts. Are you looking at a sort of maybe career as a writer? Are you
I've loved writing since college, and have been writing about social and ethical aspects of medicine since I was an undergrad 10 years ago, and I was writing about the early years of the AIDS epidemic in the U.S. At that time, I was reading Atul Gawande and found his books captivating, as so many do. And I kind of even realized at that time that I wanted to do a kind of writing in medicine that spoke to audiences beyond the doctors and scientists in a hospital. So, and then in medical school, I was really closely mentored by Dr. Suzanne Coven, who's the writer in residence at Mass General Hospital. And she's been a tremendous role model to me. You know, I use writing as a way of both processing my own experiences and kind of sharing with a broader medical community and more society at large some of the, you know, social and cultural aspects of medicine. And so sometimes that's through essays that I publish, but I actually really like using Twitter and sometimes Facebook as just a way to send off little missives. I like that they're informal, they feel real and authentic, they're not filtered through an editor or someone else, and it can be a really cool way to connect with people. And it's writing. Anytime you're using words, you're learning how to write.
Yes. I know those editors do get in the way.
I'm grateful for editors, but sometimes it's paralyzing knowing that you're going to be scrutinized.
Yes, sometimes they help. So you're on vacation this week. Are you reading or binge watching?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very weird vacation. I'm just staying inside my apartment. My husband is home. He's a third year NYU law student and is doing law school remotely this week. We're watching movies. We take turns who picks a movie each night. So we watched Alien. We watched How to Survive a Plague, a really great documentary about the early years of AIDS. And then we watched Indiana Jones. So we'll see what we pick tonight.
Those are all consonant with your current experience.
And writing. That's the other thing. Oh, right now, it's nice to have some time to, I'm doing some writing about my experience in the ICU last week, and also doing some writing reflecting on, I mentioned I wrote my senior thesis in college on the early years of the AIDS epidemic. And I've been thinking about what I learned doing that historical research then, and what lessons I might be able to take from it now. So it's nice to have some time to think and marinate a little bit before I jump back in.
And so I want you to project yourself forward in time a bit. And when this pandemic ends and you're training other young clinicians, say 20 years from now, what would you tell them was COVID-19's most important lesson?
Well, I think it's a lesson about health inequities and existing injustices in healthcare. I think that we are seeing right now that the health of one person affects the health of the entire society, and that health cannot be treated as a commodity only available to those who can afford it. It needs to be treated as a human right. And right now we're hearing, you know, politicians say no one should be denied a COVID test or COVID treatment because of their ability to pay. Well, I agree with that, but why should that be the case for cancer or diabetes or anything else? And we're seeing, and I think we're going to see more, that this pandemic doesn't affect all communities, even within the U.S. equally. It is ravaging Rikers Island right now, a where we have mass incarceration, when I call families and update them on their sick family members, it's totally different if they have, you know, a big apartment where they can separate within the apartment from those who have symptoms and those who don't. But when you talk to a big family in crowded city housing, they don't have those possibilities. And when government support doesn't include undocumented immigrants, you have a huge health justice issue on your hands. And so I think that one of the biggest lessons from this time is to say that the social safety net and healthcare for all is not, it's not optional. That's not a luxury. It's the foundation of a functional society that has any degree of concern for the people within it. And I think that we have been existing in a healthcare structure that is grossly unequal and oftentimes prioritizes profits over people. And I think that this pandemic is going to lay that bare for our whole society to see. And I hope that in 20 years, I will be able to say, and this is, you know, what really, maybe this was the last straw that helped our society change and provide healthcare to everyone. I hope that's the story rather than, you know, that we continue on with the, or we return to the status quo after this ends.
Well, Dr. Farrell, I want to thank you for speaking with me today, and I hope you'll come back in 20 years and let me, we'll review that together.
That would be lovely. Thank you so much.
That was our 262nd episode. All the others live at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Physicians First Watch and NEJM Journal Watch, members of the NEJM group. The executive producer here is Kristen Kelly, and I'm Joe Elia. Thank you for listening, and wear your masks and wash your hands.